You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
This is Diana Lear here for Yale Radio. Today we have Jennifer Steinkamp on the show. Welcome, Jennifer.
Oh, thanks, Diana. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you, actually. I would like to kind of start out with how you became an artist. You're described as a video artist, but your work is not photo or video based. So I want to get into that as well. But I want to start out with the origins of your journey to becoming an artist.
Well, I've always made artwork since I was very young, and singled out in first grade as making the best trees, and I don't know, that must have stuck or something. I don't know. I was studying design in Minnesota, and the teacher said, "Hey, you know what? You're too good to be here. You need to go to art school." And he gave me a brochure for Art Center in Pasadena. So he's, you know, with my first grade teacher and then this teacher, you know, that they're the kind of people who change your life.
Wow.
You know, with one suggestion and there you go. So I moved to Los Angeles and to study at Art Center, yeah.
What direction did you start out in at school?
Pretty much in design. And my friends were painters, and that was very inspiring to me. And I had this notion that nobody else seemed to have at the time, that good designers would also understand art. And so I, you know, was fascinated by sort of a combination. And I took a class actually at Caltech called Video Art. And he showed some of the first computer animation and structuralist film experiments, where you project film in not on the screen, but within architecture. And in addition, at that time, the Museum of Contemporary Art had just opened in Los Angeles, and they had this amazing installation art show. And I think sort of a combination of those things, the video art class and installation, it just kind of, you know, planted some seeds. And I guess the chair of my department at Art Center in design, and I said, you know, this is what I want to do, computer animation, and I want, you know, to deal with film. And he was, oh, you should drop out. So I did.
Wow.
Yeah, that was about 82. I've always said that I was kind of lucky early on that the media arts institutions, they kind of rejected me, and really it was very lucky for me. It seemed disappointing at the time, you know, when I was a young, you know, aspiring person working with, you know, these kinds of tools.
Mm-hmm.
But it kept me on my straight and narrow interest in making artwork.
Mm-hmm.
I started working in Hollywood, and I just happened to start working for these people who happened to just buy one of the first computers from another company, and they were doing motion graphics kinds of commercial work. And I got to sit there and learn the computer with them. I had no idea. I mean, back then nobody said, this is a hard drive. This is, you know, I figured out how to input coordinates and make these funny wireframe commercials. In the background, I went to CalArts for a semester and was in experimental animation and was trying to figure out how to combine my interests. Back then, you really didn't learn about computer art in school. The computers were $100,000. So it was,
right.
You know, that just didn't happen.
The path that you took was one where eventually you were able to take what you had learned in a more commercial setting and start applying it as an individual artist.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, you're not following a tradition. You're sort of opening up doors to a new direction in art.
There were certainly people who came before me. I mean, that's the kind of people that Gene Youngblood showed us in the video art class, like Ed Emshweller, for example. He made with Lance Williams, made one of the first computer animated art films called Sunstone. It's pretty amazing. And Alvy Ray Smith, they're definitely the pioneers. I'm a little bit later.
It's still kicking the wheel forward.
Oh, yeah. I had to invent a lot of sort of ways to approach making artwork with projection and animation.
Do you have to start with a photograph and you find a way to make it come alive?
For my artwork, for the longest time, I had a rule that I couldn't take anything from the real world. No photographs, no drawings. Everything had to be made in the computer and then put out in the world. And I've pretty much stuck to that, except for one piece where I used a Sharpie and made some abstract drawings and then scanned them into the computer. I don't know if that's a very important rule, but I guess it gave me sort of a structure. The drawings are made in the computer with a mouse. For example, if I make a tree, I'll make a lot of different leaves and petals and bark, and then so I paint those in the computer and apply them to dimensional shapes. The intention is to be on the edge, not too real. Like if you look close, you see, oh, there's an outline, and it's a little more like a drawing.
I wanted to talk to you about a project you did in 2017 in Philadelphia, your winter fountains, the outdoor installation of these domes that you created and projected onto. Can you tell me a little bit about that? It looks like there's pebbles and they're shiny, like there's water, like they're wet. So how are you able
Oh, good.
to, yeah.
That took a lot of trial and error to kind of make something look icy wet. I sort of made a. There's procedures for making water in the software, and then I animate that and I add it as kind of a layer so it glistens. It's on
Okay.
a layer for the highlight.
It looks like, actual pebbles. It's very three-dimensional, these forms that are with the pebbles.
Yeah, it's meant to feel like they're inside of the domes, kind of, trapped inside a bit.
Right.
So more illusionistic.
Yeah.
The lightning and things is meant to feel like a drawing. So it's not very realistic lightning, but I mean, it gives you the impression of lightning. And then there's flowers, of course. And flowers are my usual, like, semi-realistic.
So this project that you did for the Ben Franklin Parkway in Philly, with these domes, is it projected on from the inside of the dome?
No, there's posts with a projector in an enclosure for about 90 feet apart on the outside of the domes. It's structural, so they have to be pretty thick. There's sort of structural forms on the inside as well.
Okay, to hold them
So,
up and whatnot so they don't
sort of.
collapse.
They are made out of glitter and fiberglass. I wanted it to have a, certain quality during the daytime, because you wouldn't see any projection during the day because the sun's so bright.
I see.
I wanted them to look good,
Right, to
so I
still.
thought glitter would be good. It's also like a child's, art material, so it seemed to be a nice contrast. They were put up for 3 or 4 months for the centennial of the Parkway.
And how long is the projection on each one before it repeats?
I'm gonna have to just guess. Maybe around 5 minutes, I'm gonna guess.
And so let's just take one of those, for instance. How much time just to create the imagery for one?
Way too much time. I don't even know. Oh my goodness. Probably a year, more or less.
Wow.
Maybe 3/4 of a year. Yeah, it was a lot of rocks They actually represent sort of the small particles of that exist in clouds. And the particles are icy particles that bash into each other, and when they do that, they form a static charge. And that was actually inspired by the fact that Benjamin Franklin discovered that static electricity and lightning were the same thing. And during the Enlightenment period, people assumed that lightning was something that God did, would strike something and out of anger or whatever. And so he figured out that no, static electricity and lightning are the same. And so I thought, well, okay, how is lightning formed in clouds? And found out there's small particles of ice that crash together and form a charge. So that sort of became the inspiration. I mean, it's not a direct illustration of that concept. It's more like the animation's inspired by that.
No, and they absolutely have that effect because you feel the space of them moving around and then the light flashing. That translates very well. As I watch it, I'm relating to that. And do you draw the rocks to look three-dimensional, or is that just part of later animating it? Or you're actually.
The software is a 3D software. It's really similar to maybe what Toy Story or something like that would use. It's just, slightly different way to use it. There's probably 14 layers of animations combined together. There's like far background rocks that are on smaller, and then so there might be 7 layers of the rocks with their various motions, and then on top of that, the lightning, and behind some lightning flashes as well.
I can see the sort of just the way in a cloud, sometimes the cloud will, instead of a bolt of lightning, the cloud will just have a flash of glow. I can see that. But it sounds incredibly complicated to create this.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, you kind of don't know exactly what you're doing, or I don't. I've sort of let it build up and make a lot of tests and play with it. I made a small maquette with small projectors that was, set up in my studio, and I could kind of test out different concepts on that. I wrote a little program to make rocks, so it would make the sort of round shape, and so I could each one would be different. So using fun with math to, make sort of shape, and then we hand drew all the textures onto each rock, which is kind of insane. There's so many. Oh my God.
You must be very obsessive,
Oh, it's probably true.
because
Yeah,
it look.
I think artists are in general. You become really detail-oriented, and you consider, minutia detail about things. And I wanted to make like little shapes as if maybe somebody from another dimension actually created the it's sort of a creation story. It's kind of cosmology, how we came to be on this planet. And so I figure something out there is, designing these things. And so I made and also made it sort of fun for kids so they could find like little drawings of hearts and things or shapes.
Now, when you do something that involves this much time and labor and and the exhibition comes down, then what? Like you can reproject you all this work has been
Oh
it's
my gosh.
I mean you can put it up somewhere else, or can you project it
Possibly,
flat
yeah.
on a wall? It doesn't have to be on the dome.
Right now it hasn't gone anywhere else, so I don't have an answer to I think it'd be great to put some domes somewhere else. Depending. I mean, this was a winter piece, and it was the idea came from the fact that fountains are shut off during the winter, although they look great when you run them in the winter because they freeze. So it was kind of a a way to activate the park, kind of a fountain effect.
So is it, are the domes placed over the what would normally be a
No,
fountain?
oh,
No.
that's what I originally wanted to do, but then figured out the scale for that was huge, and then also covering a very, old sculpture is like a pretty dangerous idea.
These look pretty large just as they are.
Yeah, they're pretty big.
Yeah.
13 feet high by 26 feet across.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is big. So the blind eye, that's another installation that you did recently, and it looks like it showed in two places because there's the blind eye and the blind eye two.
Blind Eye was the original at the Clark in Massachusetts, and it's a panorama, three projections of a birch forest. And I was invited to do a show in Los Angeles at Praz de la Vallade Gallery, and I thought, oh, it'd be nice to maybe take a couple of the birch trees from the larger panorama and put them up in the at the gallery.
And so again, that is where you had to hand draw the birch trees, because it really looks like a birch forest like that you could have filmed. So that's pretty amazing.
Well, if you look close, you notice that they're more like drawings.
I do get that
Yeah,
feeling, but
I guess it's like the uncanny valley sort of effect where, it looks real, but then you realize it's not.
are you drawing each vertical tree
Think
trunk?
of it like a sculpture in the computer. So it's a three-dimensional form, and yeah, I tell it the software lets you make things that are articulated like a branch. And you can tell it how many branches and how much to branch, how many branches the branches have, and how many leaves, and how many flowers, and things like that. And then you kind of tell it how fast to blow, or how much wind you want, and
Where the light source is.
Where the light is, where you're looking at it from. And I actually played with that idea that I didn't want it to be a perspectival image. I wanted it to the perspective to be created by layering and value in the color and the speed of the motion.
In drawing all of it, do you only need to draw it as like a still image, and then the animation is what makes it move and change color and all that? And so it's like a gigantic drawing in a sense. Very complex because there's so much detail.
It's sort of a cross between sculpture and drawing, and of course animation. And there's three different layers in this as well, so that helped me kind of control that. So I didn't want it to feel, I didn't want you to see a horizon line or a specific point. So because I wanted you to be able to walk around the space and not be limited to one point of view. The kind of perspective I created was a monocular perspective. So it's not perspectival with two eyes the way we see. It's more monocular, which refers to one eye, and that's where the title blind eye is coming from. The size and the color change, the value, and the speed of the motion gives the impression of distance. It's a monocular kind of distance.
Does that in a way make it appear more as a painting? Because in a painting, that's what you would do. You would, you
You
play with
could,
the co
well,
color in the background, and I mean,
mm,
that's one
yeah.
way
Oh,
anyway.
absolutely. I'm completely inspired by art history and the sort of techniques of maybe the Impressionists, I believe, used color to imply depth and, the lack of color. Yeah, definitely.
How difficult is it to learn an animation program for someone who's never done that?
Well, you can do a lot with it within an hour. You could learn enough to do quite a bit. It can, the software is so involving, though, you can never really learn it all. There's just so many kinds of ways to approach things. That's what kind of keeps it interesting.
Right.
There's a lot of depth to just, there's so many different ways to approach a situation or what you're trying to get.
And you are a professor at Design Media Arts in
Yeah, UCLA.
UCLA.
People who come to our program seem to have kind of hybrid interests, which makes them a little bit more sort of out of the box thinkers. I think the culture of UCLA is a very supportive environment, and our department certainly has that attribute. It's something I noticed like later on in the program. It's like, yeah, this curious that it's just sort of this. It's not like cutthroat competitive. It's certainly competitive, but it's supportive plus competitive.
Is what you've got set up at UCLA as good as it gets for somebody
Well, I
interested
have
in
to
it?
agree with you.
Are there any books that you're currently reading?
It's called The Tangled Tree. It's a kind of a history of chemistry and evolution. Yeah, I'm researching for a project, so I'm doing a piece in the lobby of a chemistry lab in Texas. The beginning of life on Earth completely fascinates me.
Thank you for telling us your story, and it's been such a pleasure. It's really been
Oh,
great.
thanks for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.